Today's podcast is brought to you by our awesome patrons at patreon.com and by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/theratalk. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Take advantage of this special promotion. Go to audibletrial.com/theratalk and download your free audiobook today.
You're listening to Sarah Talk. It's political.
This rhetoric about make America great again. Tell me when America was great and we'll go back there. I'm going with you.
Critical.
Hang on. Let me change some words here. All right. Ready? Adults with religious confusion who truly believe in a higher power that created us and actually cares what we do with our penises and vaginas should be treated with care, compassion, and kindness, but must not be officially affirmed in their confusion, no matter how sincerely held. Fuck you.
And positively LGBT positive.
In many states, you can still be evicted from housing simply for being gay or transgender. Stand and fight with us.
Oh, and occasionally, completely absurd.
You women have a flame coming out of your vagina. You talk about being hot. Well, you sure not gonna be hot. You're gonna have a flame shooting out of your vagina. You're gonna need asbestos panties to stop that.
And now, from Orlando, Florida, your host, Sarah Austin.
Welcome to Sarah Talk. I'm Sarah Austin. In the studio with me today, my wife, Becca.
Hello.
And Andrea Staves.
Hello.
Welcome, Andrea.
Thank you.
Do you want me to use your actual real name, or do you want me to make something up for you?
I'd like you to just destroy as much as you possibly can and just go right out and say Andrea.
Oh, no, I know better than that.
Okay, it's fine.
I like our friendship too much to call you Andrea.
Me too. Happy to be here.
You could use a completely anonymous
right, you could
too,
just totally okay. Make up
we
whatever
call you
want.
Betty.
Oh, Betty. Rob.
Rob? Yeah. What is this? It's the 15th of November. It's been a week.
What a week.
I feel like we've had a little time to digest this election news.
Does that mean we're going to crap it all out?
God, I hope so. I think if you've been a listener to the show, you know kind of where Becca and I stand on this. Andrea, what's your opinion of the election, how things went?
Gosh. Well, of course, it's just been a total mix of emotions. I don't think any of us expected that Donald Trump would actually win.
Right.
And a lot of sources were saying that Hillary was going to win. And in the beginning of coverage, it looked like she was. But lo and behold, at 3:30 in the morning that day, we found out he was our president. And wow. It's just kind of hard to let it sink in, even though it's been a week. And I have a lot of, feelings about, I have a lot of friends who are personally offended by what he said, including myself.
Mm-hmm.
And to hear him now a week later saying he doesn't condone any of this activity, this hatred, this emotion that he's really pretty much spewed on all of us. So there's just, I think, a lot to talk about as far as what kind of campaign he ran and what are you trying to say?
Well, let's jump into that. So I think to some level, mm-hmm. for better or worse, I think we all kind of agree to acknowledge and accept mm-hmm. that politicians lie.
Right.
Right? Which is stupid. Why do we let them get away with that? Mm-hmm. And that I don't understand.
Right.
Is it an apathy? Is it just that people just don't fucking care?
Yeah. I think at this point, too, with this election, a lot of people are so with Trump. And I know that, people, my friends from back home, family members, they all identified with him because he was an outsider,
mm-hmm.
Because he was different and he was going to fix Washington and make our country great again. But a lot of people are so privileged to not be on the other side of the hatred. They don't mm-hmm. personally know. They can acknowledge the things he's saying and say, I don't agree with that.
Right.
But once you're that person, that gay person, you're Mexican, you're Latino, you're whatever. Yep. And this is affecting you. And how can someone cast their vote for someone like that?
There's the guys on Cognitive Dissonance, a podcast that I listen to. They've been saying all along, look, this isn't going to affect us. We're middle-class white guys. That's not going to impact us at all. But here we are, a room full of women, and I'm a trans woman.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit. This impacts us very directly. Mm-hmm. So it's easy to say, I can forgive some of the bullshit he talks about, right, because he's going to bring jobs back or he's going to whatever. Mm-hmm. It's insane.
That's exactly it. It's insane. Our president is a celebrity. He's born into wealth. He's not a politician, which is, you know, probably a good thing in one other aspect.
Wow. Right. I think that's something that a lot of people liked about him, too. Absolutely. He's not that outsider thing. That's what drove us to Bernie. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, yeah, he's been a career politician, but he wasn't in one of the major parties until this campaign. He was an independent and had been most of his life. And I mean, I guess if you're a Democrat, you saw him as kind of hijacking the party, right? Mm-hmm. If you're the liberal elite, as we call them. Mm-hmm. Something that I've been describing to people lately as I try to wrap my head around this is I don't think Donald Trump is way out on the right in crazy land. I really don't think he is. And if you listen to any of the videos, you know, stuff from the last 10 years, he's really kind of more down the middle. Mm-hmm. Well, Hillary Clinton is certainly not progressive by any stretch of the imagination. She's more down the middle. So here you have these two candidates who are down the middle in a country 100% who doesn't want to just keep going the way things have been going. You have a progressive left who's pissed off that equal rights haven't been moving as quickly as they should be. And then on the right side, you have a lot of things going on. We've talked last time, folks in poor rural areas whose jobs just dried up and where do they work now? Their economy has crashed. They don't have the things that they used to have and they want to go back to the way things were. And that's oversimplifying it, of course. Mm-hmm. But so here's what happened. You had a Bernie Sanders who was way out left. And when he finally stepped aside for Hillary Clinton, Hillary had to move left from where she was. She had to come way out over here to try to get the Bernie people and say, come to me. Mm-hmm. So she adopted some of his policies and went way to the left. On the other side, Donald Trump, again, down the middle, went way out to the right to shake the bigoty racist idiot tree so the nuts would fall out and come to the polling place to vote for him. And boy, did they.
That's true. Mm. That's actually putting it perfectly, right? He tapped into this source of people and they all came out, didn't they? And here they are post-election.
Yeah.
Doing, you know, what social media tells us they're doing.
And that's not to say that all of Trump's supporters fall into that camp, right? They're not all racist. They're not all sexist. A lot of them are, like I described, just from, and not even poor, but just from areas whose economy isn't doing as well as we would all like it to be. And I think that is the failing of the Democratic Party. If there's one thing that I would change that would have turned this election around, I would say it's that the Democratic Party gave up on the people who built it. Mm-hmm. And the people who built it were working people, union people, the middle class, who voted for Trump because the liberal elite gave up on them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's talk about some, take a deep breath, Donald fucking Trump is going to be our president.
It was all fun and games when he was just Alec Baldwin on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
We have to talk about the media here because the media never took him seriously. And because of that, they gave him tons of free publicity. Right, he was just the joke that we put on. Oh my God, George Takei just tweeted they're renaming the Electoral College Trump University.
Oh man,
no one knows what it's for. It's rigged from the start, and it's a huge fraud.
Oh my God,
oh, that's great.
Thank goodness for him.
Breaking
too.
News.
What was I talking about? The media. Right. So you have the media who gave Donald Trump just tons of free airtime. And I, having worked in radio, our deal was it is equal airtime. So if I open up an hour interview for the Republican candidate, I also have to extend an hour of my airtime on that show for the Democratic candidate and anyone else running as well. Like it has to be equal time. So that boggles my mind how that all worked out too.
Well, and not only that, they were with the Trump free publicity, at the same time, the media was also completely ignoring Bernie Sanders.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So, like, there's no Bernie fair blackout. Media here. So, what's going on?
I mean,
this is the media's fault.
Yeah, yeah. And I would go so far as to say, too, not to completely derail topics, but, like, the media is, of course, they're aimed at their audience, right?
Oh, sure.
And
definitely.
Who, you know, what's going to appeal to them and what's going to get their time. So it's, like, so hard these days, too, to find, like, a good source of anything.
Right.
In politics.
Well, and if I'm running CNN, my goal is to make money.
Yep.
Right? We like to talk about how the news media is supposed to be kind of equal in their reporting and truthful in their reporting, that they should be really doing the investigative research to bring you truth in news and not just the sensational headlines that will sell papers the next day. And to further compound the media problem, nobody's buying papers anymore.
Right.
How many subscriptions does the New York Times even have as compared to 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago? The advent of the internet and free news, free media, this 24-hour news cycle has just destroyed the traditional media model.
It's also destroyed the truth behind it, because you have so many news articles, especially with social media. You really have to do your homework when you see something. And I was reading an article last night about that, about how, you know, there's so many fake news stories.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Like, the Huffington Post did something really cool. It was either today or yesterday or recently, where they said the headline of their article that they posted was, Bernie Sanders could still win the presidency
in
this loophole, right?
Yes.
And they're like, point is, you clicked on this because you're crazy. That's not possible. There's a lot of fake news going on.
Right.
Right.
So that was a good point.
There was another one. Google has announced that they're not going to allow fake.
Right. Google and Facebook both. I thought I saved that, but now I can't find it.
So there's a lot of problems in the media that just make all these situations.
Right. And I try to police the people in my friends list, too. Like, people will post something that's from like abc.com.co. Hello. Like, red flag, that's not a real URL.
Right.
That is a scammer. But they'll post it as if it's real, and then, you know, I will have to be like, hello, have you first of all, did you even look at the URL, or did you see ABC in it, and it looked kind of like ABC's website, and so you went, okay, yep, that's ABC. And Snopes, use Snopes, check stuff. So that's the other side of the coin. When we talk about the media's reporting, how much of that is their responsibility to report the facts and not just things that will sell advertisements and make them money? How much of that responsibility is ours as the consumer of that information to make sure that it's factually accurate?
Well, you know, if you go into a store and you have a food allergy, you're going to check the label. You're going to do your research. It's kind of the same thing with the media. If you want the most current, the most accurate information, I think it's a lot of it is on you to do that homework. You can't always trust everything. You know, if you have a peanut allergy, you're not going to go buy a candy bar.
Absolutely. But then on social media trends, right? It's you're behind the keyboard you're safe. And that's been, you know, a long time coming to you in different, I guess, forums.
Okay. So the first story is from the Raw story. As we look towards Inauguration Day, there are some things that we have to consider that are happening. A woman filed a federal lawsuit in June alleging that Trump raped her in 1994 when she was 13 years old and threatened to harm her and her family if she talked. The lawsuit claims Trump tied the girl to a bed, raped her as she begged him to stop, then struck her in the face with his open hand, and bellowed that he could do whatever he wanted. Trump, of course, has denied the lawsuit's claims, but is scheduled to appear December 16th for a status conference in the U.S. District Court of New York. This is your president, right?
Yeah.
So I really don't want to jump on the bandwagon of the people who are like, oh, Hillary and her emails, is what's just an email. What's the big deal, right? I think that's a serious issue as well. This is potentially classified, and whether it's marked classified or not, you've been in this business for long enough, you know that it's at least sensitive, right?
Yeah.
So handle that information with care.
Yes.
But here's a guy who may have, we don't know, actually raped a 13-year-old. The woman filed a suit against Trump without an attorney earlier this year in California, but the case was dismissed on a technicality. Trump's ex-wife accused him in a sworn deposition of raping her, although she later walked back those claims, and he can be heard boasting on a 2005 hot mic recording that he can get away with grabbing women by the genitals without consent because he's rich and famous. At least 14 women have come forward since that recording was revealed to accuse Trump of sexually assaulting them over a period of decades. This is who you voted for, folks. This is your guy. Fucking make America great again.
Gosh.
One of the things that he has claimed to do that I think people on both sides of the aisle may have kind of been okay with is that this drain the swamp that he wants to do. His deal was, there's too much corruption in politics. Washington is bought out by special interests. I'm going to drain the swamp. Well, apparently, when you drain the swamp, this is what's left inside. Here's a list of Donald Trump's cabinet selections that he's looking at choosing. Chief strategist, Stephen Bannon. Stephen Bannon was the executive of Breitbart, which is a super right-leaning, racist, sexist, air quote, news source website thing. Talk about fake news, right?
Mm-hmm.
This guy. He's like number one. And again, as we go through this, these people, they're, what are there? 400 some positions that they have to fill?
Yeah.
Zoe saw. He met with President Obama, and everybody says after that meeting, like, clearly he just didn't know what he got himself into here, right?
Nope.
Now he is looking at names on the list of people that he's going to appoint, who will then hire all of the other people to work in that administration. This guy on the top of the list. Secretary of State. There's six options. John Bolton, who is a former U.S. ambassador to the UN under George W. Bush. Bob Corker, senator from Tennessee and chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Newt fucking Gingrich, former House Speaker. And Rudy fucking Giuliani,
former psychopath,
New York mayor,
former
current psychopath, former New York mayor.
That's
Secretary of State. So again, if it's let's drain, and he addressed this, we're going to do the 60 Minutes thing, but and he kind of addressed that. He was like, look, you can't just come in and not have anybody who knows what they're doing.
Right.
Treasury Secretary Jeb Hensarling, representative from Texas and chairman of the House Financial Services Committee. Steven Mnuchin, former Goldman Sachs executive. That's fantastic. And was Trump's campaign finance chairman. Tim Pawlenty, former Minnesota governor. Still fishing in the swamp, looks like. Defense secretary. Kelly Ayotte, departing senator from New Hampshire. Member of the Senate Armed Services. Stephen Hadley is a national security advisor under George W. Bush. John Kyle, former senator from Arizona. Jeff Sessions, senator for Alabama. Attorney General Chris Christie, New Jersey governor. Rudy fucking Giuliani again. Jeff Sessions again. And these three names kind of appear the most repetitively under different categories. So you can probably guarantee that these three guys will appear somewhere. Interior Secretary Jan Brewer, former Arizona governor. Harold G. Hamm, chief executive of Continental Resources, which is an oil and gas company. Sarah fucking Palin.
Oh,
we were done with her.
Nope. Oh, you just thought you were done.
I guess so.
Agriculture Secretary Sam Brownback, Kansas governor. Sid Miller, Texas agricultural commissioner. And Sonny Perdue, former Georgia governor. See, all of these people are in the political realm right now. What happened to cleaning out the special interests?
Let me just play devil's advocate here for a minute. This is a huge fucking swamp, right? Mm. Maybe he just wants the experts in the swamp experts.
Okay.
Oh, I love that.
So that he can train. No, awesome. I tried. Nothing.
I mean, nope, nothing. I guess it's got to compensate for his lack in political experience. But what the heck, Donald? What the heck? You come in and you say you want to be the outsider. Then you, I don't know.
Yeah. It just proves he didn't. Well,
and again, I think it's because he walked in and sat down with President Obama. And Obama was like, look, this is what the job is. Your interview's over. We've selected you. Unfortunately, it doesn't appear that you read the job responsibilities list. So let me read that for you now. And he was like, what the fuck? I need people who know what they're doing.
Right.
Commerce Secretary. Once again, Chris Christie. Mm. Health and Human Services Secretary. Now, this scares the fuck out of me. Okay. Mike Huckabee.
Oh, God. Another one I thought we were done hearing
former about. Former Arkansas governor, 2016 presidential candidate, and Jesus apologist. I don't know what you'd call him. He's terrible. And worse than that, if it could be, Dr. Ben fucking Carson.
Oh, Ben. Oh.
Ben Carson, who believes that Joseph of the Bible built the pyramids to store grain.
Yes, because that's what.
And what's he in charge of?
Health and Human Services Secretary. He's not in charge of that yet, but he's on the short list. Mm.
He's a doctor, though.
He doesn't know anything
also,
about humans.
Health and
right.
Yeah, right.
Right, like science stuff.
Health and Human Services continued. Bobby Jindal, former Louisiana governor. And from the great state of Florida, Governor Rick Scott.
Thank God.
Well, yeah, take him, please, because we don't want him.
Get rid of him. We don't want him.
What,
yeah.
What a useless piece of shit that guy is.
Florida is pretty useless. So.
For Energy Secretary, one of the three is Harold G. Hamm, Chief Executive of Continental Resources, again, an oil and gas company. So that's great. Education Secretary, again... Dr. Ben Carson!
No, Ben.
So your kids can learn all about Joseph and the pyramids.
Great.
Yeah, there will be a
I will be Bible. Pulling my child out of public school.
Seriously.
There will be a Bible in every classroom.
Oh, my God. That's ridiculous. We could talk for hours on that, couldn't we?
Homeland Security. Rudy Giuliani again. I'm not entirely sure why. Michael McCall is a representative from Texas, chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee. So, okay, he's kind of in there. Jeff Sessions again.
But he's from Texas.
But he's from Texas, yeah.
This is strike against
their Homeland Security is keep the Mexicans out. Right. EPA Administrator, Myron Ebell, a director at the Competitive Enterprise Institute and a prominent climate change skeptic.
Whose stress level is like right here.
CIA Director, Director of National Intelligence. Michael Flynn is the former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency. Peter Hoekstra, former chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. Mike Rogers, former chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. Francis Townsend, former Homeland Security Advisor under George W. Bush. So, I mean, I guess at least he's trying to find people who have some kind of job experience with
right.
it. Drain the swamp. Now, for those of us who... are terrified of the Donald Trump election. There is one wild conspiracy theory running out there that could still get Hillary elected. Your eye is twitching.
It is. Oh my gosh. I've had a rough week.
Now again.
Is this from fakenews.com? Right.
No, this is where the fuck is this from? It's from the New York Post.
Oh, all right.
Oh, goodness.
Okay. New York Post. Hillary Clinton won the popular vote mm-hmm. by like 200,000, right?
Right.
All those people that voted third party, thanks a lot.
Well,
or Harambe.
And again, we've discussed, you know, there are places where it is okay to do that and right. would
just,
get the third party towards the 5%
the
that they need,
sure.
but yeah. not the swing
right,
states.
Right, not Florida.
Now, we are not a direct democracy. If we were a direct democracy, we would not have the Electoral College. We would take the popular vote and Hillary Clinton would be soon to be our president.
Right.
However, we are not a direct democracy. The founding fathers implemented this insane electoral college that nobody really understands how it works to basically prevent exactly what is happening right now from happening. Alexander Hamilton, some quote about that no man should hold this office who doesn't have the requisite experience mm-hmm. and understanding. There is... In December 19th, the Electoral College will meet. Now, those are the people that we chose to represent us at the actual casting of the Electoral College votes. People on the far left are still holding out this hope that maybe we can get in touch with these people, right? And convince them to flip it, right? Maybe Florida went for Trump, but if we can talk this person in... According to the Constitution, chosen electors of the Electoral College are the real people who will vote for the president when they meet on December 19th in the respective state capitals. However, there is technically nothing stopping any of the electors from voting their conscience and refusing to support the candidate to whom they were bound, or from abstaining from voting altogether. There's even a name for it, becoming a faithless elector. The idea of electors reversing their vote is rarely discussed, although this cycle has been discussed a lot, and was most recently bandied about after the incredibly close 2000 election in which George Bush narrowly beat Al Gore. And electors going faithless is exceedingly rare. Well, over 99% of electors throughout American history have voted as pledged, according to an analysis done by the New York Times. It does happen, though. The last faithless elector reared his roguish head back in 2004 when a lone anonymous voter in Minnesota declined to vote for Democrat John Kerry and instead voted for Kerry's running mate, John Edwards. The rogue's vote was purely ceremonial, as Bush already had the 286 electoral votes, more than enough to ensure his re-election. Faithless electors are technically barred in only 29 states from ignoring the will of voters, though the penalties are light, and a faithless elector has never swung an election. So there's this feeling out there that if you get enough faithless electors together, maybe you can swing an election, right? Right. Maybe the Electoral College will function as it was designed to keep this demagogue from taking over our country. I don't know how much stock you put into that. You know, sure. Again, the everything that you read is leaning right. One way or the other. Everything, everybody has an agenda.
That's wild. What if Hillary, though, they decide at that point in December, okay, Hillary.
Yeah.
You're going to be the president. Like, how would she feel about that? I mean, sure, some of us would be like, yeah.
Right.
But poor Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Like, watching that concession speech and everything.
Although, again.
I don't know, though, because she seems to. Like, I think she would take it.
I think so,
and go
too.
With it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You could tell that she was extremely disappointed.
Yeah.
But I think that if she knows she got the popular vote.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the key.
So, you know, it's not, I don't think she would.
Right. She would come out and say, the actual will of the people
right.
has
yes.
been done today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what she would say.
Yeah.
Let's do the 60 Minutes thing. So Trump appeared on 60 Minutes.
I've done a lot of big things. I've never done anything like this.
Just took your breath away.
A little bit. And I think I realized that this is a whole different life for me now.
In his first television interview, the president-elect seemed more subdued than the candidate had been. And Donald Trump surprised us when fundamental positions of his seemed open to negotiation.
Are you really going to build a wall?
Yes.
They're talking about a fence in the Republican Congress.
Sure.
Would you accept a fence?
For certain areas, I would.
5 days after the election, demonstrators across the country are protesting his victory.
Not my president!
We asked about that and reports that some of his supporters have acted in threatening ways.
They're harassing Latinos, Muslims.
I am so saddened to hear that, and I say stop it. If it helps, I will say this, and I'll say it right to the camera, stop it.
Here's a guy who clearly understands television. Like, this whole thing is just seems like a very fucked up reality TV show to me. Like, it really mm-hmm. does. And I'll look at, right in the camera and I'll say, Camera three. Stop it. What?
Yeah, it's ridiculous, right?
During what seemed an interminable campaign, a divided country found all kinds of ways to describe Donald Trump. Visionary businessman, vulgar self-promoter, political neophyte. But after Tuesday, for all Americans, there's only one description that counts: president-elect. Since the election, demonstrations against him have broken out in over a dozen cities across the country, and people on both sides are on edge. What we discovered in Mr. Trump's first television interview as president-elect was that some of his signature issues at the heart of his campaign were not meant to be taken literally, but as opening bids for negotiation.
Sounds a lot like religious people. Oh, that's not, you're not supposed to take that literally.
Like the Bible?
Yeah, like the Bible.
Oh.
Tonight, you will also hear from his family about whether they'll play roles in a Trump presidency. But we begin with President-elect Trump, whom we interviewed Friday in his penthouse home in the Trump Tower.
Well, congratulations, Mr.
Thank
Trump.
Thank you.
You're president-elect.
Thank you.
How surprised were you?
Well, I really felt we were doing well. I was on a string of about 21 straight days of speeches, sometimes many a day. And the last 2 days, I really had a pretty wild time. I did 6 speeches, and then I did 7.
And but everyone thought you were going to lose.
I know. I did my final speech in Michigan at 1 o'clock in the morning, and we had 31,000 people, many people outside of the arena. And I felt, when I left, I said, how are we going to lose? We set it up a day before, and we had all of these people, and it was literally at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I said, this doesn't look like second place. So we were really happy. I mean, it was, these are great people.
On election night, I heard you went completely silent. Was it a sort of realization of the enormity of this thing for you?
I think so. It's enormous. I've done a lot of big things. I've never done anything like this. It is so big. It is so...
It's so big. You have no idea how big it is. You'll never believe how big this is.
The words makes me want to vomit.
No,
enormous. It's so amazing.
Kind of just took your breath away. Couldn't talk.
A little bit. And I think I realized that this is a whole different life for me now.
Hillary called you. Tell us about that phone call.
So Hillary called, and it was a lovely call. And
it was a lovely call. It was so lovely.
Yeah, what did she call me? It was lovely. Five adjectives he uses all the time. That's it.
I want to see his schoolwork when he was learning about creative writing. And
it was a tough call for her.
Such a
I mean, I can imagine. Tougher for her than it would have been for me, and for me it would have been very, very difficult. She couldn't have been nicer. She just said, congratulations, Donald. Well done. And I said, I want to thank you very much. You were a great competitor. She's very strong and very smart.
What about Bill Clinton? Did you talk to him?
Who the fuck cares about Bill Clinton? Sorry, I do that a lot.
No. It's okay. It's
wait a minute now. Donald does, because if you remember, Bill Clinton during every single debate.
That's email, right. Bill Clinton, it's bad.
So, of course, they want to know what he thinks about Bill
Clinton.
Day.
Really? What did he say?
Actually called.
Who cares what Bill Clinton said?
Last night.
What did
and
he say?
He couldn't have been more gracious. He said it was an amazing run. One of the most amazing he's ever seen. He was very, very, really very nice.
It was a pretty nasty campaign. Do you regret any of the things you said about her?
Well, it was a double side nasty. I mean, they were tough and I was tough. And do I regret? I mean, I'm sitting here with you now.
Which has nothing to do with anything.
Mm. That's his whole campaign. Oh, rather all the debates.
Where's Barbara Walters?
Right?
That's the one I want to see.
And we're going to do a great job for the country. We're going to make America great again. I mean, that's what... It began with that, and that's where we are right now. There's so many things that can
no
be
regrets
done.
About
I can't regret. No, I wish it were softer. I wish it were nicer. I wish maybe even it was more on policy or whatever you want to say. But
do you remember in one of the debates when... It was the one right after the pussy grabbing happened. And they said, like, first question out of his mouth was, Donald, what about this pussy thing? And then he goes, ISIS. We need to get rid of ISIS. And I'm like, oh, this is him.
This, right.
It's so funny. It's ridiculous.
Well,
it's so
funny. I think this goes back to the very first thing we talked about, which is we allow a certain degree of not only flat out lying in politics, but also this dirty mudslinging, too. We permit that. We, the people, allow that to happen.
But I will say that it really is something that I'm very proud of. I mean, it was a tremendous campaign.
Can we talk about yesterday?
Yes.
It was President Obama.
Sure.
90 minutes. You were scheduled for what, 15?
15 max.
We talked about foreign policy. We talked about domestic policy.
this was going to be just a quick little chat, and it lasted close to an hour and a half, and it could have gone on for 4 hours. It was just, in fact, it was almost hard breaking it up because we had so many things to say.
Because I had no idea what the job entailed, and it took him that long to explain it to me.
Oh, right.
And he told me the good things and the bad things. I mean, there are things that are tough right now. And
like what? Give us some meat.
Look, I don't want to divulge, but we talked about the Middle East. That's tough. It's a tough situation. I wanted to get his full view. And I got his full, I got a good part of his view. Mm-hmm. And I like having that because I'm going to be inheriting that in a short period of time. Mm-hmm. I found him to be terrific. I found him to be very smart and very nice, great sense of humor, as much as you can have a sense of humor talking about tough subjects, but we were talking about some pretty tough subjects. And we were talking about some victories also, some things that he feels very good about. But,
like,
what I really wanted to focus on was Middle East, North Korea. Obamacare is tough. Health care is a tough situation right now.
I bet he asked you not to undo it.
He didn't ask me, no. He told me, the merits and the difficulties, and we understand that.
You looked pretty sober sitting there in the Oval Office.
That's hilarious.
Obama, on the other hand.
You had to take two shots before the meeting.
Oh, I'm speaking of sober, where is the alcohol? Because I can't listen to much more of this.
Oh, man.
Did something wash over you? Or?
No, I think I'm a sober person. I think the press tries to make you into something a little bit different. In my case, a little bit of a wild man. I'm not. I'm actually not. I'm a very sober person. But it was respect for the office. It was respect for the president. Again, I'd never met him before, but we had.
I mean, let's collectively roll our eyes right now. Respect for the president, whom this asshat once said was not even a real citizen. Show me your birth certificate.
Yes.
Fucking respect.
Well, I think about that sometimes because, like, you think about politicians and the presidencies, and it's been, 8 years with no scandals. And the only thing close to a scandal was the one that this asshat created about the birth certificate. Mm-hmm. Like, but think about his daughters, his wife, himself. Like, there's been no big, huge presidential scandal.
Yeah.
Like, there has in years past. So,
right.
I'm going to miss that.
Me too. Yeah.
We had a very good chemistry going. And I really found it might not be that I agree with him, but I really found the conversation unbelievably interesting.
I want to emphasize to you, Ms. President-elect, that we now are going to...
It's like Obama can't even figure out what the fuck to say.
He's like, wait a minute, you're the president-elect.
Right.
Obama's waiting for Ashton Kutcher to jump out.
I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Want to do everything we can to help you succeed, because if you succeed, then the country succeeds.
Was it at all awkward at all, given...
Very, very awkward.
What you said about each other... You said he was not born in this country. He said things about you. He said
unqualified. It was a very interesting thing because, and a few people have asked me from my family, what was that first period of time like?
Yeah.
We never discussed what we said about each other. I said terrible things about him. He said terrible things about me. We never, ever discussed what we said about each other.
There was no awkwardness.
I'll be honest, from my standpoint, zero. Zero. And that's strange. I'm actually surprised to tell you that. It's, a little bit strange.
In the future. Thank you, Scott.
Do you think that your election is a repudiation of his presidency?
No. I think it's a moment in time where politicians, for a long period of time, have let people down. They've let them down on the job front. They've even let them down in terms of the war front. You know, we've been fighting this war for 15 years.
The message of your campaign.
We've spent $6 trillion in the Middle East. $6 trillion. We could have rebuilt our country twice.
And by the way, killed hundreds of thousands of American lives have been lost. Mm-hmm. So there are some things here that I not totally disagree with.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you look at our roads and our bridges and our tunnels and all of the, and our airports are like obsolete. And I think it was just a repudiation of what's been taking place over a longer period of time than that.
You know, you surprised everyone by winning the primaries, beating 17 other Republicans or 16, whatever. Yeah. People are really surprised that you won this election. Are people going to be surprised about how you conduct yourself as president?
You know, I'll conduct myself in a very good manner, but depends on what the situation is. Sometimes you have to be rougher. When I look at the world and you look at how various places are taking advantage of our country, and I say it very proudly, it's going to be America first. It's not going to be what we're doing. We're losing this country. We're losing this country. That's why I won the election. And by the way, won it easily. I mean, I won easily.
Are you going to sometimes have that?
You won easily.
How do you figure?
Right.
Your opponent got the popular vote.
What was it? Last election, it was like 11:15. It had been called and we all went to bed.
Right.
3 o'clock in the fucking morning, I was sitting up watching this. Yeah. Shit show finally come to an end.
Mm-hmm.
That same rhetoric that you had on the stump, or are you going to rein it in?
Sometimes you need a certain rhetoric to get people motivated. I don't want to be just a little nice monotone character. And in many cases, I will be sure I can.
But bitch, can you be?
That's easier. Honestly, doing that is easier.
So let's go through very quickly some of the promises you made and tell us if you're going to do what you said, or are you going to change it in any way?
No, this will be fun.
Are you really going to build a wall?
Yes.
They're talking about a fence in the Republican Congress.
Sure.
Would you accept a fence?
A picket fence?
For certain areas I would, but certain areas the wall is more appropriate. I'm very good at this. It's called construction. But
so I burn.
It could be some fencing.
What about the pledge to deport millions and millions of undocumented immigrants?
What we are going to do is get the people that are criminal and have criminal records, gang members, drug dealers. We have a lot of these people. Probably 2 million. It could even be 3 million. We're getting.
It could be 3 million. Maybe 3.5 million. Not really sure. Maybe 4 million.
It's simple though, right? Just get them out.
Sure. Right. Well, and this is one of his like first 100 days plans too, is to like create a task force on organized crime. Like, we haven't fucking done that before. Are you kidding me?
Oh my gosh.
Look, if that had worked, then we wouldn't have gangs. You're going to have gangs.
Mm-hmm.
Of our country, or we're going to incarcerate. But we're getting them out of our country. They're here illegally. After the border is secured and after everything gets normalized, we're going to make a determination on the people that you're talking about, who are terrific people. They're terrific people.
Wait a minute.
I know.
That's not what he said before.
Make a determination at that. But before we make that determination, lastly, it's very important. We want to secure our border.
We had a fantastic, productive meeting.
So you were with Paul Ryan. You met with the Republican leadership. What was the one thing that you all agreed you want to get done right away?
Lunch.
Well, I would say there was more than one thing. There were three things. It was health care. There was immigration. And there was a major tax bill lowering taxes in this country. We're going to substantially simplify and lower the taxes.
And you've got both houses.
And I have both houses, and we have the presidency. So we can do things
lickety-split.
In a long time since it's happened.
And he's about to have the Supreme Court also, right? So this is one of the arguments that I heard that, you know, Trump is, he just said all that crazy shit again to shake the nut tree and get all the nuts to fall out and come vote for him. And then he was actually not really going to do all that crazy shit anyway. Now he's in business mode, right? Now he's building a tower.
And they gave me a lot of credit. Don't forget, I was abused 4 or 5 weeks ago. They said I was going to, instead of having all three, we're going to lose all three. So that was good. But those are the three things that we really discuss.
You said that lobbyists own politicians because they give them money. You admitted you used to do it yourself.
Lobbyists and special interests.
And you want to get rid of all of that.
I don't like it, no.
You don't like it. But your own transition team is filled with lobbyists.
It's the only people you have down there.
You have lobbyists from Verizon. You have lobbyists from the oil gas industry. Sure. You have food lobbyists.
Everybody's a lobbyist down there. That's what they are. They're lobbyists, they're special
interests. On your own transition team.
They're trying to clean up Washington. Look,
how can you clean
everything?
She's got it right. How can you clean them out if that's who you're hiring? Right. What the fuck?
Thing down there. There are no people. They're all people that work. That's the problem with the system. The system. Right now, we're going to clean it up. We're having restrictions on foreign money coming in.
He hasn't brought that up yet.
We're going to put on term limits, which a lot of people aren't happy about, but we're putting on term limits.
Okay, listen. The problem with term limits is you have to have a majority of states vote in favor of that.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. Let's go around the room. Let's say you're a representative or a senator. Would you vote for the end of your career?
No.
Nobody's going to vote for this.
Right.
Unless you're an honest politician.
Yeah. Right. Those two words do not belong together.
Unless you're Bernie Sanders.
Oh
Bernie.
You're doing a lot of things to clean up the system. But everybody that works for government, they then leave government and they become a lobbyist, essentially. I mean, the whole place is big lobbyist.
Yeah, you're basically saying you have to rely on them, even though you want to get rid of them.
I'm saying that they know the system right now, but we're going to phase that out. You have to phase it out.
Okay.
Let's talk about your cabinet.
Okay.
Have you made any decisions?
Yes.
Tell us.
Well, I can't tell you that.
But like his taxes. I'll release my taxes soon, but not now.
Oh, they talk about that too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things you're going to obviously get an opportunity to do is name someone to the Supreme Court. And I assume you'll do that quickly.
Very important.
During the campaign, you said that you would appoint justices who were against abortion rights. Will you appoint, are you looking to appoint a justice who wants to overturn Roe v. Wade?
So look, here's what's going to happen. I'm pro-life. The judges will be pro-life.
But what about overturning this?
Well, there are a couple of things. They'll be pro-life. They'll be in terms of the whole gun situation. We know the Second Amendment, and everybody's talking about the Second Amendment, and they're trying to dice it up and change it. They're going to be very pro-Second Amendment. But having to do with abortion, if it ever were overturned, it would go back to the states.
Some women won't be able to get an abortion.
No, it'll go back to the states.
By state? No, some...
Yeah. They'll have to go to another state.
Oh my God.
You have got to be kidding me.
No, it's insane. You remember a while ago, and we know this, that someone had pointed out, even Hillary, she's like, Donald Trump is on a completely different playing field than we are.
Right.
If he was anybody else, he couldn't get away with this kind of speak. And not even talk about being pro-life. Oh.
So let's pretend that the map of the election results would be the same map of how the states would vote for their own abortion rights. Okay? You live in Florida. You want an abortion? You have a sea of red states that you have to climb across to get to a blue one to have your abortion.
Mm-hmm.
This is insane. So this is the Republic, right? This is the right who doesn't like big government and wants the local governments to handle their own shit and not be told what to do by the big bad national government. But here's the problem with that. you will never have a United States of America as long as that process of thinking exists. It has to apply to all of us or none of us.
Right.
We've only gone through 17 minutes of this video, and I would rather watch paint dry than listen to this guy fucking talk anymore.
I have to go to lunch after this, and I have no appetite. So I see what you did here. I know you're trying to save money and all, but Jesus.
Well, we're gonna
watch some Trump, and you'll be good.
Maybe if I have time later, I'll come through and cut out the pieces that I want to talk about. But I honestly, I've completely had. Later in the thing, they bring his family out. Oh, and that's great. You got to listen to his wife, like half English her way through a conversation.
Maybe we can just gnaw on this for the next 4 years, 2 minutes at a time.
Like spread it out a little bit so we don't all die.
All right. So we'll have plenty of presidential election stuff to talk about over the next 4 years. So we do have some other stories of things that are going on. You know, while you were watching the presidential debacle, there were some other things happening that are important to talk about. Down ballot, this one comes from Pink News. North Carolina has lost a string of big investment ventures, as we've talked a million times, over the Republican Governor Pat McCrory's decision to sign the contentious House Bill 2, which voided all local ordinances protecting LGBT rights, banned transgender people from using their preferred bathroom, and permits businesses to discriminate against LGBT people on the grounds of religious belief. The state has been plunged into crisis over the law as it shed thousands of jobs, and Democratic candidate Roy Cooper had made repealing the law a cornerstone of his campaign. However, the race narrowed as McCrory hit back, buoyed by heavy investment from an anti-LGBT evangelical groups who ran an ad campaign in the state depicting a little girl getting raped because of trans equality. Trigger warning, here's that ad.
Roy Cooper's bathroom plan. What does it mean to you? Any man at any time could enter a woman's bathroom simply by claiming to be a woman that day. No one is exempt. Even registered sex offenders could follow women or young girls into the bathroom or locker room, and no one could stop them. Protect women's privacy. Prevent danger. Say no to Roy Cooper and his bathroom plan. It goes too far.
Right, so the end there, you have this little girl going into a stall, and a man, the stall next, opens the door, and you'll be happy to know that Roy Cooper trounced this motherfucker in the election.
Yeah, that was some really good news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, of all the things that...
Maybe North Carolina can get back to normal now.
Oh my God, that poor state.
I don't want to be Roy Cooper cleaning up that mess.
Right, yeah, seriously, Godspeed.
So we've talked about Mike Pence a million times, right? Ugh. He's the Pat McCrory of Indiana, right?
Oh, well, he's Mike, the vice Mike president-elect.
Pence, he is now the vice president-elect. But you'll be happy to know that the former governor of Indiana turned vice president-elect has apparently now, in his name, made a number of donations to Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
Actually, he slashed funding to Planned Parenthood in his home state. And he signed the anti-abortion law that was so stringent. Even pro-life Republicans were concerned about it. But apparently, you can make donations to Planned Parenthood, you know, in someone's name, right? In someone's honor. And the beauty of it is he will receive the certificate of your donation.
Is he getting hundreds and hundreds?
Amazing.
So, it doesn't tell me how many, but I'm sure there's a fair few. So, of course, Planned Parenthood could really use the help more than ever.
Yeah.
So, if you're interested in doing that, please put Mike Pence's name on the...
That's awesome.
I know.
This is another one from Pink News. Teenage girls face prison for hugging and kissing.
What?
Yeah. Two teenage girls have been arrested in Morocco for kissing and hugging. The young women face up to 3 years in prison under the country's strict homosexuality laws, with their trial due to start any time now. Reports suggest that 16-year-old Sanaa invited 17-year-old Hajar, who is homeless, into her house in Douaidiat, Marrakesh, on October 26th. The two kissed, but were being secretly filmed by Sanaa's cousin, who quickly alerted her mother. I feel like I should have that Roy Cooper music in the background.
Yeah, right. Dun, dun, dun,
dun. The girl's mother is said to have reported the pair to the police, who subsequently arrested the lovers, according to the Moroccan Times.
If found guilty, the pair face between 6 months and 3 years in prison. Moroccan law penalizes acts of, quote, sexual deviancy between members of the same sex, a term that police reports and court documents use to refer to homosexuality more generally. Although many men have been arrested and imprisoned under such laws, this is believed to be the first case of female minors being prosecuted for homosexuality in Morocco. Fuck you, Morocco.
Right?
Seriously. I can't imagine.
Right?
Either their shoes at all. That's terrible.
Yeah.
Teenagers.
Yeah.
Right. Like, how are they going to grow up, like, and be okay with this huge life event they just went through?
And what's disgusting, I think, about this is beyond just this, there are other countries, if this had happened, they would be hanging right now.
Right.
Yeah. That's it's so sad.
Some good news.
Yay.
From NPR.
NPR, really?
Yeah, of course, from NPR.
I love NPR.
Federal scientists have launched another human test. Okay, I can't do it. Federal scientists have launched another test in human volunteers of Zika vaccine. This one uses a more traditional approach than an experiment that started in August. Okay, so there's a... I want to stop and talk about vaccines in general, but there are groups of scientists who are working on a vaccine for the Zika virus. This is how we stop diseases. These people who have been recently elected, sadly enough, who are climate change deniers, are also, many of them, on this anti-vaxxer list. Federal officials are eager to develop a vaccine as quickly as possible, which is why they are pursuing multiple approaches. This experimental vaccine, called ZPIV, has already proved effective when designed to target a virus similar to Zika, called Japanese encephalitis. The vaccine has also been tested in monkeys, where it was proved effective against Zika. If the vaccine proves to be promising, federal researchers hope to expand trials in countries where Zika is prevalent in early 2017. So, that's some good news we all need.
Thank you, science.
Absolutely, right? We could pray for Zika to go away, but
it wouldn't
this,
work.
This is so much more effective. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted Brandon to come on the show and talk about this because he has the actual medical background to talk about this and not just, you know, me from my soapbox, but get the fucking flu shot. Mm-hmm. Take your kids and get them fucking vaccinated. Do you want to know why people aren't dying from measles and mumps and rubella?
Right.
Because we developed vaccines. Yeah, they don't fucking cause autism. They don't. Get your kids vaccinated and get the flu shot.
Right.
Now, the flu shot, actually, I just saw another article. I didn't print this one out, but scientists are now saying the year that you were born can determine which strains of the flu virus that you're actually more susceptible to.
That's interesting.
So, like, science, we're learning more and more every day. The way the flu vaccine works, a group of scientists get together and decide, like, 10 strains of the flu that they think, based on the best evidence available, that they think will be most prevalent this season. So that's why if you have somebody say, oh, I got the flu shot and I still got sick, a couple of things. Number one, not every strain of the flu is included in this vaccine. And number two, did you have a cold or did you have the flu?
Right.
Those are two very different things. Yes, you can still get sick.
It's kind of like, you know, watching the Weather Channel and taking an umbrella with you because there's a chance of rain. It's still better than no protection at all.
All right. The last story I have, unless we decide to get into...
I have my little game, too, if you want to do that.
The Mormon thing. Okay.
You don't want to look at it, though.
I don't want to play.
You have to play.
I don't want to play. All right. So, the next story is from Patheos, November 8th. So, election night, right? A live election night broadcast convened with Kenneth Copeland Ministries. Pastor George Pearson, who runs Copeland's Eagle Mountain International Church and is married to Copeland's daughter, Terry, told a rather interesting and dubious story. And we're going to listen to that.
It is a multi-generational outpouring of the Holy Spirit. And of course, we have Brother Copeland with us on set. Pastor Terry here is with us. John Jester, who is our
yes, sir.
Youth pastor of 1440 here at Eagle Mountain International Church.
Yes, sir.
And Pastor Profeta, we're glad that you're here with us. You pastor a great church, Christian Worship Center here in Fort Worth.
Yes, sir.
You've worked for the ministry before. You were in security, took very good care of us.
Very honored to be here, Pastor George. Thank you. Pastor, still take good care of us.
And, you know, we're talking about this multi-generational outpouring of the Spirit. Tell us, first of all, because I've just been telling everybody what's going on at church here. We have, we've got an outpouring of the Spirit with our super kids. We've got an outpouring of the Spirit with the kids in middle school. We've got an outpouring of the Spirit with the babies.
Mm-hmm.
We had babies lifting their hands in a service. They were over there in the children's area, the babies area, on a Wednesday night. And they started praying, and they have our service on the screen. The kids were crying. The babies were crying.
They
started praying on the screen, I'm telling you the truth. I would not lie. These babies were lifting up their hands.
All of them in the room.
All of them.
The workers noticed it.
In the room.
It got quiet. Their little hands went up. That has never happened before. It has to be God. And I know there are some parents right now saying, ooh, if I could get some of that in my house.
Well, but that goes along with your word for 2017. Watch the children.
Right.
Watch for the children coming forth with miracle working power manifest around them. And you said, watch the little ones. A child shall lead them.
What?
A child shall lead them.
I just had like the crazy.
Watch the children. You had like a cold chill. Like,
yeah.
I felt uncomfortable.
Oh my God.
I think we're all kind
of. I just can't.
No, these kids, like think back to when you were little.
When I put my hands up in the air, usually it might pick me up.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
You're not in your mind going, I am a child. I'm about 4 years old and I really love the grace of God.
Yeah, no. Like, not at all.
Yeah, no.
That's not your internal monologue. As a baby.
As a baby.
That we allow that to run rampant in our society too. That bothers me a lot. And everybody wants to, well, they're not hurting anything. Just let them be. Let them be insane. Let them do what they do. They're not hurting anybody. Sure they are. They're teaching children that if you don't have the answer to the question, why would all these children be picking their hands up all at the same time? Clearly it's God. Because I don't really have another answer for why that might happen.
They were all crying. What could it be?
On the last actual episode, we jumped into mormonandgay.lds.org, and I encourage you to again, we'll say it again, please go to this website, watch the videos. If you find one that you enjoy, please send us a note. We're going to try to, each episode, maybe pick out a video and watch it. And again, the impetus of the website looks like they're trying to be supportive of gay people in their organization, but actually they're not. So this is Ricardo's story. Ricardo knows that his feelings of same-sex attraction are not what define him as a person or as a son of God. Rather, his experiences have provided him with tools that he can use to bless others as he continues to follow the Savior.
My name is Ricardo. I am a Mormon. I am a father of 6 children, and I am attracted to men. I have to say that my life has always been trying to figure out the whole picture of things. I remember as a child, I was always driven to art. That was my escape, creating things. The friends that I knew or kids at school would be playing soccer or things like that, but I didn't feel completely connected there.
They were studying science.
I actually remember the very first time my father had me going to his bedroom and he told me, watch your mannerisms, you need to be more manly about the way you talk, you need to do these other things that boys do. And after he talked to me, I just went to my room and started crying. I couldn't understand what was the big deal about being me and myself. I did what every Mormon boy is supposed to do. You get the priesthood, you pass the sacrament, you go on a mission. I did that, but I never really completely felt whole. After I was on a mission for the church for 2 years, I came to the United States to pursue a degree in graphic design. And during that time, that's when I met my wife. And from day one, I was felt really genuinely attracted to her.
The first time I met Ricardo, I had just moved into an apartment. It was my senior year in college.
And I didn't think anything. And then he asked me out, and we progressed from there.
There was just something really impressive about her, and I like how I felt around her, and I thought to myself, I want that. I want to feel that all the time. And as we began dating more seriously, I felt that it was important to share with her that I had thoughts and feelings towards men, but I didn't flat out tell her, I'm attracted to men. I was scared to have to tell her that.
This is, I mean, it's funny, but it's not funny.
Like, we've only watched two or three videos, right? And the overarching theme so far for me is that every one of these people seems like they're still hurting so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that was a surprise. It was a shock. I wasn't expecting that. I don't think anyone expects something like that. But I know the kind of person he is, and that didn't change my feelings for him. I still loved him and still wanted to pursue our relationship.
I know a lot of people might ask, well, how is that you said that you're attracted to your wife when you said you're attracted to men? I got to say that I don't really have an explanation for that.
There's a thing called bisexuality.
Yeah, there you go.
Where people are attracted to both genders, all genders.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Those words don't exist in the dusty old book that they sure. let you read.
Yeah. It's black and white.
All that I can say is that's how I'm wired. A few years ago, I was hired as a creative director for the church. And at a meeting at work, I met a fellow co-worker there that is openly gay.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very, very impressed with how confident he was to talk about his same-sex attraction in a non-shameful way. And I remember we went to lunch and I began to share things, and it was really great to be able to talk to someone that I could relate to, somebody that could help me and find support, and somebody that will help me to understand more about myself, because he himself experienced the same thing. I really was experiencing a full-on awakening in my soul and my heart. And as I've been going through this experience, I started putting the pieces together of this picture that is my life. And I began to create a great network of friends and support.
He started making friends and going to firesides, and he would come back really happy and energized, and he said that he was just feeling more even. But by the summer, I was kind of tired. He was texting a lot and planning things, which was good for him, and I was happy for him, but at the same time, I didn't feel number one.
She said she was happy that I was more confident, more calm, more at peace. But she felt literally like a single mom, you know, because I'm working so many hours, get home, and then these friends call me or text me or whatever, and she is needing my time and attention. And I did not realize how much time was taken from my family and my wife. We were not walking in this journey together. And what I agreed to do was to get home and put away my cell phone, dedicate my time to the kids, to her. And that really helped.
I think it took a good 4 months after him being really open and honest about it all, and him being more involved in making healthy male connections with other men. But I just needed a balance in our lives.
Looking back at all the images that make up my life, I started to see more of a defined picture, when I can see God at the center of it. And I can see myself reaching out.
He didn't even, like, he's not making eye contact with the camera or the cameraman, right? Yeah. He's just looking despondently looking down.
Yes, and I just noticed that, as you said that, his wife, she was crossing her arms at the end. Like, she's trying to form this explanation that he was happy, and then her arms kind of crossed.
No,
she's like, this way. I'm waiting for something to happen.
Really out of spiritual thorns that I experienced before, this whole picture of being gay and Mormon really has a different meaning for me now. Before, the mere fact that I had those attractions always made me feel really disconnected to God and to the Savior. But it was just my perception of myself and how I saw myself in relationship to the Savior. I never felt completely worthy of him.
Doesn't sound like he
does.
Cracking on his voice and
right.
Like, I mean, I know it can be an emotional thing, feeling connected to God, but I don't know. Right. I don't buy it.
the liberating part. Being able to talk to people that I love about this, to get their support, to talk to my wife, just to be myself, has been the most amazing thing. That I don't have to be perfect, that I can actually acknowledge an attraction and move on with my life.
As long as you don't act on that attraction.
Right.
He's trapped, isn't he?
Mm. Yeah.
That there is power on getting things out of the shadows and allow the light of Christ touch them and heal them. It's like completing the picture. It's like reaching out, moving up towards the light. It's not a lonely journey. I will say that it's a family journey. It's a community journey. The support from my bishop, my wife, the support from my close friends at work and co-workers. As I feel their love and support in my life, through them I feel the love and support from God. The attractions aren't going to go away. They're going to be there my whole life. But I don't feel that I'm losing anything in my life. To me, that's being authentic. It's finding that core happiness within you. And for me, it's important that that core happiness is aligned with my beliefs and the gospel. That's what has worked for me.
What I'd like to know is, what would he say to one of his children should they come to him one day and make a confession like that?
Right. Is that going to bring up a whole new thought process for him and say, do I have to rethink my whole life now, or am I going to just continue?
Right.
I mean, it's easy to make sacrifices when it's you, but when it's your kid and you know their struggle, like, that's the difference. Because we watched a video, I don't know if it was the last episode or whatever, where it was a mother talking about her adult son.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like, as a parent, when you're going through something or you've gone through something that now your child is going through it, I think that's a whole different type of feeling.
Yeah, that must be, like, insane. Think about it. I don't have that experience, but I know you both do, you know, and your kids are growing up.
Hmm.
And that's there's just, no words for this one either, you know?
The little things are hard enough to deal with, like, you know, trouble at school or a bully on the playground or whatever, but this is big stuff. This is...
Absolutely.
So now that we're sufficiently depressed...
Oh, God.
I really want to hear from some supportive parents. Right. Most of the stuff that we've watched here has been like super religious-y, preachy parents who are like, well, fine, if you want to be gay, but just, you know, don't act on it and, you know, pretend that you're not. And I know there are some great parents out there. I'm in some groups on Facebook where parents of trans kids can come together and talk about their experiences and connect with each other. So if you're a parent out there, and you've supported your kid through something like this, love to hear from you. So give us a call.
And we had, just this past weekend, it was Pride.
Yeah, Orlando Pride.
Orlando. So if you went to that with your kids, you know, tell us, how'd you do? How fun was it?
I would love to hear from some parents who like took their kids for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, I want to know, like, what were the reactions? How did the kids react to an event like that? It'd be great.
I know I saw a lot of my friends out on Facebook, even that aren't a member of the community, but were just there as allies, brought their kids out. So
I was really disappointed. I know. It snuck up on me. I didn't even think about it. And then it was here. And then I was like, shit, we should have gone to that. Yeah, that would have been a good thing.
Awesome. Oh, yeah. Well, we have to put it on the calendar next year.
Yes, we'll definitely do that for next year. That's all I have to talk about today. Anybody have anything else?
If you don't want to play my game, I guess I'll just make Andrea play it.
Andrea.
Rob. Betty. Rob. Whatever your name is.
All right. What's your game?
Okay. This is, you have to pick the real city.
Oh, no.
I found a list of the most lewd sounding cities in America.
Oh, good.
So I picked out some real ones and then I put some fictitious ones in there. So I'm going to give you.
Where's my bell?
Is there a bell?
Oh, I know where it is. Hang on.
Okay.
This is perfect for me because I'm from Mexico, New York. So anything's possible.
All right, so we're going to start in South Carolina.
Oh, good. All right.
So your three options are Spread Eagle, South Carolina.
Yes. I hope that's real.
Sugar Tit, South Carolina. Or Dick Shooter, South Carolina.
Really?
Really, those are your three.
One of those is real.
One of those is real.
Damn, I really love Spread Eagle. Wait, Sugar Tit? That's
Sugar one? Tit?
Singular Tit.
Yes, Tit, and singular.
What was the second one?
That was
Dick
the second
Shooter.
One. I'm just going to go ahead and go with Dick Shooter. Is it real?
Do you want to weigh in on this, Sarah?
What was the first one?
The first one was Spread Eagle.
I'm going to go with Spread Eagle. Yeah. All right,
Dick Shooter versus Spread Eagle.
You're both wrong.
Oh, shit.
Oh, my God.
Sugar Tit.
What?
Wait, how is it spelled?
It's sugar, space, tit, T-I-T.
There's a space, too.
Wow.
All right.
Wow.
I got two more.
All right.
So we're going to go over to California. Mm-hmm. And you have Short Pump, California.
Okay.
Blue Balls. California.
That's too easy, right?
Or Rough and Ready, California.
It's ridiculous. All right. Yeah, it's 27.5 chance. I'm just going to go with... Wait, was there another Dick one?
No.
Oh.
Well.
Oh, the Ready one.
Rough and Ready.
Rough and Ready. I'm just gonna
go Short Pump or Blue Balls. Rough and Ready?
Yeah,
is that your answer?
Ready.
Short Pump.
You're wrong.
Oh, no.
Andrea got this.
Rough and Ready, California.
Wow.
Now I know where I want to move.
All right. All right. Let's go to Kansas. This is the last one.
Oh, no.
You've got Lubbers, Kansas, or Bald Beaver, Kansas, or Dry Wood.
Oh, we're all 16-year-olds today.
I know.
Oh my God. What was that first one? I like that.
Lubbers.
Yeah, Lubbers.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, Lubbers.
No.
No.
Really?
You got it?
No, I don't know.
No? It was Drywood.
Drywood.
Oh my God.
Drywood, Kansas. Oh, that's awesome.
One out of three.
That's yeah, that's pretty bad. Good. That's hilarious. That's a great game.
I'll have to send you
You have to
out.
Find some more, yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's like 50 states and I could go.
There's 50 states.
I got a whole list. I could make a new one. And
next week.
Okay, that's it. That's all the frivolity and craziness that we have for today. Tune in again next week, where I'm sure we'll have more Donald Trumpisms to talk about. Mm-hmm. And I know I can find some more crazy religious shit for you. You've been listening to Sarah Talk.
Sarah Talk is made possible by listener support. Visit patreon.com/SarahTalk to become a patron and help keep this program going. Contact Sarah and company by email at producer@saratalk.com or call 224-40-SARAH. That's 224-407-2724. And follow us on social media, facebook.com/SarahTalkRadio and on Twitter @SarahTalkRadio. Sarah Talk is a production of Sarah Austin Media.